Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we're going to tell you all about that redistricting bill that the governor has signed and the legislature approved to put a redistricting measure on the ballot for Californians to approve in response to the Texas gerrymandering. Then, hear why Abar Campanijar is back in the race challenging Republican Congressman Daryl Issa. A recall effort against Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow is advancing, and now Snow is firing back, firing a lawsuit against the petition circulators, accusing them of fraud. Then we'll have a special report from East County Magazine on aerial firefighting capacity for our region as we enter fire season. You can weigh in on the county's legislative priorities for the coming year at an August 27th virtual meeting, and we'll tell you how on our show today. Highway upgrades are finally moving forward for that junction of State Route 94 and 125 in the La Mesa Spring Valley area, and we'll have details. El Cajon City Council heard from protesters for a full hour and a half over the city's cooperation with ICE. There's a vacancy on the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District Board, and we'll tell you how to apply on our show today, as well as how to apply for a vacancy on the Lemon Grove City Council. Then from California News Service, we'll have a report on reforms in CalWORKs. After that, on Destination East County, hear about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region throughout the month of September. We'll also have a California News Service special report on proposed charter school reforms in California. And finally, from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including President Donald Trump's threat to send the National Guard to Chicago next after already sending them to Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. Plus, hear about a court ruling on DEI in schools and why the United States is falling behind China in the electric vehicle race. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a congressional redistricting plan approved by the state legislature. The measure will be on the November ballot. The measure aims to counterbalance the Texas legislature's effort to gerrymander its congressional district maps without waiting for the next census, in hopes of picking up 5 seats in Congress for Republicans. By contrast, California's effort, if approved by voters, could allow Democrats to gain 5 or more congressional seats from California. The passage by a 2/3 majority in California's Assembly came on the heels of the California Supreme Court's Wednesday rejection of a lawsuit filed by Republicans to block the redistricting plan. Governor Newsom signed the legislation within hours of passage by the Senate and Assembly. A special election Proposition 50 to approve the new maps is set for November 5th. California voters will be asked whether or not to approve the proposed maps that would override the state's independent redistricting commission, which is typically responsible for drawing district maps. Governor Newsom has stated, "California and Californians have been uniquely targeted by the Trump administration, and we are not going to sit idle while they command Texas and other states to rig the next election to keep power. This proposal would give Californians a choice to fight back and bring much-needed accountability and oversight to the Trump administration," the governor added. But State Senator Brian Jones from Santee, a Republican and Senate Minority Leader, said in a press conference last week, "Gavin Newsom and Democrat, the scheme is unconstitutional. It's undermining both the letter and the spirit of the California Constitution. It tramples on the will of the California voters." Jones added, "Gerrymandering by politicians is never okay, whether in California, Texas, or anywhere else," Jones said at a news conference before the Senate debate. "Our state should be the model for fair elections. not the model for rigged elections. Specifically, the legislature was tasked with considering three measures, including amending the Constitution, authorizing the replacement of the existing congressional map, a bill which contains the new proposed California congressional map for voter approval, and to call the special election with appropriate funding, estimated to about $250 million for election administration. All of the Republican Assembly and state members who represent San Diego County voted no on the legislation, while all of the Democratic officials voted yes. Senator Akilah Weber Pearson, a medical doctor and Democrat, issued a statement saying the action taken by the Texas legislature sets a dangerous precedent that could harm communities across state lines. She represents La Mesa, El Cajon, and Lemon Grove in the 39th District. She added, "As a practicing physician and legislator, I have dedicated my life to the well-being of others, protecting health, safeguarding rights, and ensuring opportunity for every community. We must do what we can to preserve the integrity of our democratic process and protect the economic well-being of our residents." Weber Pearson concludes, "This is about defending our right to fair representation, ensuring health care remains accessible, and maintaining our investments in education and infrastructure that strengthen and enrich our communities." But Republican Assembly Member Carl DeMaio, whose district includes conservative areas of East County, such as Santee and Lakeside, said on the Assembly floor, "Make no mistake about it, this is a political stunt, an unnecessary, costly election, because Gavin Newsom needs chum in the water for political attention." Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas, a Democrat from Salinas, said he was proud of the chamber and proud of his colleagues for meeting the moment with courage. The speaker added, "President Trump wants us to be intimidated, and his playbook is a simple one. Bully, threaten, and silence, then rig the rules to hang on to power. We are not intimidated, and we are acting openly, lawfully, with purpose and resolve to defend our state and to defend our democracy." Newsom issued a statement on X shortly before the vote in all capital letters, mocking Trump's communication style on social media in a post that reads, in part, "Wow, my maps, the best maps ever made, will soon pass in the greatest legislature anywhere in the world, not just America." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Susan Taylor.
With his prospects enhanced by potential redistricting, Democrat Amar Kampanijar has filed papers for a rematch against Congressman Daryl Issa in the 48th Congressional District, Times of San Diego reports. Kampanijar lost to the veteran Republican congressman by 8 percentage points in 2020, but Governor Gavin Newsom's proposed redistricting map for East County would bring in San Marcos and Escondido, two cities Kampanijar carried. The legislature on Thursday approved a constitutional amendment that would put a new state congressional map before voters this fall in California, after Texas Republicans created a new Republican-friendly map for their state. In a statement, Kampanijar says, "This campaign is about making sure that all families from San Diego to Riverside have a representative who works for them." And he adds, "If the proposed maps are approved, I'll be on the ballot, ready to represent this community and fight for a fair economy, affordable health care, and take on corruption. Families here deserve someone who will put them first." He will face at least four other Democrats in the June 2026 primary, it appears. So far, he's filed only an exploratory committee. Issa, in an appearance on Fox News, says of the proposed new map that he's not afraid of it. Kampanijar was born and raised here in San Diego County. The son of a single mother, he worked his way through college before joining the Obama administration at the U.S. Department of Labor. He currently serves as a Naval Reserve officer and is slated to begin teaching at Georgetown University in the fall. Even with possible voter-approved maps, Issa still has a chance of winning in the new district. Cara Luna, University of San Diego political science professor, told Times of San Diego, and that's due to Issa's formidable war chest and substantial base of support among Republicans. He said Kampanijar is the only potential candidate in the field with real name recognition, but he's also a multi-election loser and comebacks are rare, says Luna. That's a reference to Kampanijar's unsuccessful campaign for Chula Vista mayor as well as Congress. Under the proposed maps, 41st Congressional District Republican incumbent Ken Calvert may be forced to run against ISA in a Republican primary if California voters approve the mid-census redistricting. Luna says ISA, one of the richest members of Congress, would probably have the advantage due to his money, though Calvert has a strong MAGA base. Meanwhile, the Democratic field is thinning. On Thursday, Padre Dam Water Board member Suzanne Till said she was dropping out of the East County congressional race against ISA and entering the contest to succeed State Senator Brian Jones in the 40th District. Jones is retiring from the state legislature due to term limits. With or without various state remaps, are Republicans looking at major House losses in the midterms? Luna told Times of San Diego, given that the economy is showing signs of stagflation, a soft labor market and tariff and tax cut-driven inflation for the first time since the 1970s, the GOP should likely take a major hit in 2026. But that's assuming elections are fair and free, he noted, adding, from mid-cycle redistricting to President Trump talking about restrictions on voter registration and abolition of mail-in ballots, to ICE agents showing up at Democratic political events like Newsom's speech last week, you can expect the boundaries of acceptable electoral behavior to be increasingly challenged over the next 14 months. Asked how he predicts the November remap vote in California will turn out, Luna quips, "Let me rent 7 monkeys and have them throw darts at the map and I'll get back to you." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, with a report based on our news partner Times of San Diego's reporting, this is Miriam Raftery.
After several failed efforts, supporters of a recall effort to remove Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow from office have finally received the city's okay to move forward on their petition. Now, Snow has filed a lawsuit in Superior Court against the recall effort's organizers' effort, including the main petitioner, Kenneth King, the city of Lemon Grove's election official and city clerk, Joel Pablo, is also named as a defendant. Supporters of the recall effort say they are concerned about the mayor's role to locate sleeping cabins for homeless people near a school without proper community input or notification. The notice of intent to recall Snow says she misled residents by telling county supervisors that residents supported a low-barrier homeless encampment near our schools and homes without engaging the community first. The notice claims, quote, "Snow campaigned by saying the encampment would house families with children and seniors, while in fact it would house the mentally ill, drug addicted, and petty criminals. This could bring more homeless individuals to our city without necessary resources, increased sheriff presence, or assurances that Lemon Grove's own homeless will be helped," unquote. The recall notice continues, further accusing Snow of using racial stereotypes against a community activist. Snow, who was elected in November, alleges that the group has used fraudulent tactics in its attempt to remove her from office. The lawsuit seeks to immediately halt circulation of the petition. Snow's suit claims recall proponents used bait-and-switch tactics to deceive voters into signing the recall petition attached to an earlier version of a notice of intent, which includes claims that Snow was under federal investigation into corruption in cannabis licensing. Snow insists that those allegations are false. She also disputes claims by petition supporters regarding findings of an independent auditor. Quote, "The independent auditor did not find any potential fraud," unquote, she said, adding that those findings are public record. The mayor also denies using racial stereotypes against anyone and disputes a claim by recall supporters who accused her of having a political opponent arrested. According to Snow, she called for a recess after the opponent, former council member Leanna LeBaron, disrupted the meeting with shouting and ignored repeated requests to leave. Snow says, quote, "During the recess, the former council member was escorted out by the sheriffs on the sheriff's own initiative. I did not have her forcibly detained or removed. She managed to accomplish getting arrested all on her own," unquote. The mayor said she stands by her efforts to ease the homelessness crisis. King failed to answer questions sent via email by East County Magazine asking him whether he had any evidence to substantiate corruption allegations against the mayor and about the allegations raised by the mayor, claiming King used misleading tactics used to collect signatures. Instead, he emailed a statement which reads, quote, This recall is about protecting Lemon Grove. We have to solve, all in caps, our homelessness before we help the county with theirs. Allison Snow sold us out to the county for her own future. She didn't care that she was handicapping ours. We need a mayor who is committed to putting Lemon Grove first. Unquote. Snow's published answer to the notice of intent states, quote, "This recall isn't about policy. It's about politics and personal animosity," unquote. She says she ran for office to help make Lemon Grove a clean, safe, and prosperous city by fixing streets, supporting small businesses, and helping families afford to keep a roof over the head and food on the table. She notes that since her election, the city has made numerous street repairs, secured over $20 million in outside investments to help stop and prevent homelessness, and seen new businesses filling empty storefronts. Snow, a Democrat, told East County Magazine, quote, "This recall is a political stunt, a really expensive one." The recall proponents want the city to spend almost $500,000 for their recall. Most people in Lemon Grove would like to spend their money paving streets and fixing storm drains, not on a recall. "I trust the people of Lemon Grove to see through the drama," unquote. In May, former Lemon Grove City Council member Jerry Jones, a Republican, wrote on social media that he didn't support a recall. Jones posted, quote, "I want to be clear that a recall of Mayor Snow is nothing but a personal grudge, and it hurts the community more than it does Mayor Snow," unquote. Pablo, the city clerk, said the recall proponents had erred several times in earlier attempts to have the petition accepted by the city. He said that, quote, "At every stage, my role has been strictly administrative and guided entirely by the elections code to ensure the process is fair, lawful, and consistent with established procedures provided by the Secretary of State's recall manual," unquote. Pablo said King and the other proponents first submitted their NOI to recall on April 15th, but had technical defects that did not conform to elections code requirements. After the corrections were made, the proponents submitted revised versions addressing the changes needed. According to Pablo, further clarification or minor corrections were requested on later submissions before a final version was approved for circulation on August 7th, with 120 days for supporters to collect signatures. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a special report from East County Magazine on air power capacity to fight fires in our region. As we approach peak fire season, CAL FIRE and County Fire are holding a press conference this week to discuss the many preparations the agencies have made, but questions have been raised over air power readiness due to temporary closure of the Ramona Airport due to expansion, and SDG&E losing its Erickson air crane, which has helped fight fires in recent years, East County Magazine has learned. We've been researching these issues, and here's what we learned. The massive Erickson air crane helicopter that SDG&E has utilized in recent years has a 2,650-gallon water tank. It's capable of dropping over 25,000 gallons of water per hour on brush fires. But due to acquisition of the Erickson helicopter by Helicopter Express, SDG&E no longer has a contract for this key firefighting aircraft. Alex Welling, SDG&E's Strategic Communications Manager of Wildfire Resiliency and Operations, confirms in an email to this reporter, "While renewing the Erickson air crane was not an option for SDG&E in 2025, we collaborated with our fire agencies to further strengthen our aerial firefighting resources with the addition of twin Black Hawk aircrafts. When working together, these two Black Hawks are more efficient than the air crane," Welling says. Now, the Black Hawk has a 1,000-gallon tank, so two Black Hawks combined still have slightly less tank capacity than one Erickson air crane, which again has 2,650-gallon capacity. As for CAL FIRE's Ramona Air Attack Base, it's closed for an 8- to 12-month construction period to increase capacity. While the base is closed, air tankers which can spread retardant ahead of fire lines must fly in from the Hemet Ryan Air Attack Base in Riverside County. That's 47 miles from the Ramona base. If San Diego County experiences a significant wildfire, CAL FIRE has said it plans to deploy 4 air tankers instead of the customary 2 to help make up for the time delay, ABC 10 News reports. CAL FIRE indicates it could also activate a temporary reload base with a portable retardant unit at Brown Field down in Otay Mesa. But Patrick Ward, a former seasonal firefighter who has worked out of the Ramona Air Tanker Base and as a contractor doing fire retardant at Ramona, is concerned about delays in fighting brush fires in East County. Ward told East County Magazine, "This means we won't have any air tankers reloading out of Ramona," adding that he is concerned about delays in air tankers coming from Hemet or in delays activating Brown Field, which is also prone to foggy conditions. In 2002, when the Ramona runway was extended, the air tankers operated out of Gillespie Field in El Cajon, says Ward, adding that Gillespie has a longer runway and higher weight load than the Ramona Air Base. It's also centrally located in San Diego County and closer to East County, where the county's worst wildfires have typically started in the past. He wants to know why CAL FIRE is not utilizing Gillespie Field as a temporary air tanker base again, as it did back in 2002. He also raises concerns over the prospect of other major fires in the state and what would happen if Hemet's large capacity air tankers are already deployed somewhere else, especially if a fire starts shortly before dark when air tankers cannot fly. Darkness in winter can occur as early as 4 p.m., yet as last January's Los Angeles wildfires show, fire season is now year-round. A reflection of climate change's devastating impacts. A very large air tanker can carry up to 4,000 gallons of fire retardant, capable of preventing a small fire from getting out of control. East County Magazine reached out to CAL FIRE's Public Information Officer Michael Cornett. He says, at this time, we do not have an agreement in place to utilize Gillespie Field as a temporary mix site, nor have we reached an agreement with the contractor, Perimeter Solutions, for its operation. Additionally, aside from emergency funding, there is currently no established mechanism to support mix-site operations at Gillespie Field, he confirms. However, the CAL FIRE spokesman adds, we do have the capacity to utilize Brown Field as a temporary mix-site once funding becomes available. This funding will be activated during periods of ongoing vegetation fires or at the direction of CAL FIRE leadership. Cornett says use of Brown Field is best suited for CAL FIRE as it offers ample space and size, established contracts, and the ability to support mix-site operations. Brown Field will serve as the designated temporary mix site when authorized, while construction is underway at the Ramona facility, he affirms. Ward told East County Magazine that a whistleblower called him anonymously to state that the reason CAL FIRE is not using Gillespie Field for air tankers during the Ramona closure is because of price gouging by the nation's only authorized manufacturer of fire retardant, Perimeter Solutions. According to Ward, the whistleblower claims that Perimeter Solutions wanted to charge $300,000 a month to load retardant at Gillespie, and he adds, they are charging the U.S. Forest Service $5,000 a day. A CAL FIRE official also emailed East County Magazine an August 6th article published in the New York Times titled, How One Company Maintained a Monopoly on U.S. Fire Retardant. The article details how Perimeter and its lobbyists succeeded in squelching competition to maintain a monopoly as the nation's only provider of fire retardant approved for use by state and federal agencies. The New York Times article states, Perimeter has used its dominance to boost profits at the expense of federal and state government agencies, its biggest customers. Retardant utilized to fight the Los Angeles fires in January cost 20% to 30% more than 4 years earlier, outpacing inflation. Since 2021, when investors bought the company and took it public, Perimeter's profits have roughly doubled, according to the NYT investigation. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, parent agency of the U.S. Forest Service, has called it a massive risk to rely on a single manufacturer for fire retardant. Besides high prices, supply interruption in the event of a factory fire or other disaster is a critical concern. A rival company lost its contract with the Forest Service back in 2005 due to concerns over toxicity of fish. Another company that briefly had a rival product accepted had its federal approval canceled over concerns that a goopy substance formed in tanks of air tankers that had used both Perimeter's product and the rival's product. That rival manufacturer, Fortress Fire Retardant Systems, has since abandoned its efforts, restoring Perimeter's monopoly. A monopoly that potentially puts all of us in fire-prone areas at risk.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. You're invited to a virtual meeting on August 27th to learn about the county's state and federal legislative priorities and give feedback on what you think is important for the 2026 legislative program. The legislative program is updated each year, and your feedback helps ensure that the issues San Diegans care about most are included. During each state and federal legislative session, the county takes positions on bills and regulatory actions. So far this year, the county has taken positions on 26 state and federal bills. These bills relate to some of the county's top priorities, such as equitable access to quality health and social care, Tijuana River Valley pollution, affordable housing and homelessness, ensuring safe communities. The virtual community meeting will take place on August 27th from 5 to 6 p.m. To learn more about the 2026 legislative program and register for the virtual meeting, visit engage.sandiegocounty.ca.gov. If you have questions about the virtual meeting, the legislative program, or need disability-related modifications, language interpretation, or other accommodations, email legislative.program@sdcounty.ca.gov. The meeting will be recorded and available at the Engage San Diego site at a later date. You can also submit comments through September 5th at the website. And again, that's engage.sandiego.ca.gov. For questions, you can call area code 619-531-5198.
Caltrans is moving forward on long-planned upgrades for State Routes 94 and 125 in La Mesa at the junction with Spring Valley. Construction is expected to begin in late spring or early summer next year, with the first two phases expected to be finished in late spring or early summer of 2028. The project will provide a direct connection from southbound 125 to eastbound 94, reducing congestion on freeways and local streets, as well as providing better access for bicyclists and pedestrians. During an August 12th presentation about the project to the La Mesa City Council, project manager Jake Stelton and Karen Jewell from Caltrans said funding for the first of two phases is secured, and they are hopeful of getting funding for the rest. Traffic and safety have forever been a struggle in the area where the freeways meet, since the original interchange project from 1974 did not include a southbound to eastbound connector. Stelton explained how this causes congestion on both 125 and westbound 94. The total cost of Phase 1 is over $115 million for construction and design. Another $7 million in costs for project approval and the environmental documents have been completed. Caltrans expects the environmental reevaluation and design to be completed this fall and winter at a cost of $17.5 million. Stelton said the first phase of the project, auxiliary lanes, is fully funded through the State Transportation Improvement Program dispersed by SANDAG. Phase 1 will feature auxiliary lanes on southbound Highway 125 at Lemon Avenue and Spring Street, on eastbound 94 at Bancroft Drive and Kenwood Drive, and northbound 125 at 94 and Lemon Avenue. Stelton said the project will require demolition of the Mariposa Street Bridge in La Mesa and reconstruction to lengthen that bridge to accommodate the extra lanes with sound walls, bike lanes, and ADA improvement for pedestrians such as wheelchair ramps. Phase 2 will feature a direct freeway to freeway connector from southbound 125 to eastbound, additional sound walls and additional retaining walls and bicycle improvements along Spring Street. The second phase will come at an expected cost of about $160 million. Caltrans expects construction to begin in 2028 and 2029. In an email to East County Magazine, Caltrans Stelton says the agency is looking at various funding options for Phase 2, including federal, state, and regional sources. The road ahead now appears smoother, but there have been some delays along the way. The project slowed down in 2021 when it was discovered that groundwater in the area was higher than Caltrans had anticipated. So groundwater studies and more documentation stalled the project. La Mesa City Council member Patricia Dillard expressed concern over the plan's previous delays, as well as safety concerns for people trying to cross over the freeway to get to Spring Street. Jewell said, quote, "I think you're going to see a big improvement after these auxiliary lanes go in, since right now traffic in both directions has to merge down to three lanes to go under the Mariposa Bridge." Jewell said she has been involved with the project for about 7 years and noted that, quote, "the community has come together and lobbied for Sandag to support this project and get it going, so that's how it got the funding that it now has," end quote. She added that both Caltrans and Sandag are trying hard to find funding for the rest of the project. Quote, "There's a lot of different options," she concluded, "and we're going to try all of them." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Dozens of East County residents filled El Cajon City Council chambers on August 12th, demanding the city repeal a resolution allowing police to cooperate with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. The effort was organized by Latinos en Acción and Activist San Diego. During public comments, 26 people addressed the council for 90 minutes in a near-capacity crowd. Some held protest signs and wore T-shirts displaying their opposition to the resolution and support for an effort to recall District 4 Councilmember Phil Ortiz. Ortiz voted for the measure in February when it passed by a slim one-vote margin. Mayor Bill Wells and Councilman Steve Goble also voted for the measure, with Goble changing his vote from a previous session where the measure had narrowly failed. Council members Gary Kendrick and Michelle Mitchell voted against it. California's SB 54 law prohibits local law enforcement officers from participating in immigration sweeps and allows officers to only turn over undocumented immigrants to ICE if they have been convicted of certain serious felony crimes and if there is a judicial warrant. The El Cajon measure goes further, allowing local police to turn over immigrants if they are merely accused of a crime. Latinos en Acción President Mayrene Branham, an El Cajon resident, told the council, quote, "It's been very clear that even when we show up in numbers here, this city council does not care. If we don't feel safe, if we don't feel listened to, then that doesn't make our city any better." Branham and other protesters spoke to reporters at a press conference before the council meeting. She launched a recall petition against Ortiz and has been going door-to-door gathering signatures on a petition to qualify the recall for the ballot. She said the idea is to get somebody who can listen to their constituents when they come in numbers and not be ignored and work with us, unquote. Ortiz's District 4 has a majority of Latino voters, as well as many other immigrants. Connie Elder of La Mesa organizes protests twice a week in front of Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon as part of her involvement with the Activist San Diego group. Elder said, quote, "Why would the council introduce such a hateful, divisive resolution that really says nothing and does nothing? You want us to be the most MAGA of all cities in California," unquote. Mary Davis of El Cajon was the lone speaker in support of immigration enforcement. She said, quote, "Yes, we are a nation of immigrants, but what is too frequently glossed over is the unspoken word legal immigrants. There is a real cost to illegal immigration on our infrastructure, on our health care, and our housing, and the safety of residents on this side of the border," unquote. She added, "Enforcement is a deterrent. Most importantly, it saves lives." Julia Andrews addressed City Council, saying she supports the Ortiz recall, and she too has been gathering signatures. But she said, quote, "Fear of signing the petition is strongest amongst immigrants, even those who are here legally and who are citizens. Many are hesitant to sign despite being registered voters, only because they fear that ICE might get a hold of the document," unquote. Santee resident Zach Ashmore volunteers for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. He has also been collecting signatures. He said he's met many District 4 residents who are eager to support the cause, but he added, quote, "I have also witnessed two trends when I have been canvassing that I find very troubling, fear and despair," unquote. After one of the speakers addressed Ortiz directly, the council member indicated that he plans to meet with a handful of community members regarding his thoughts on SB 54. Previously, Ortiz has said he wants to see SB 54 expanded to allow local police to hand over immigrants for a broader range of crimes such as shoplifting, theft, disorderly conduct, forgery, fraud, drug offenses, and arson. Branham fired back, quote, "I think it's time you talk about why you're being recalled. We asked you to vote no and you didn't," unquote. One speaker named Chris, who did not provide a last name, addressed Councilmember Steve Goebel, saying, quote, "Your commitment to public safety is a farce. ICE is massing up in unmarked cars, refusing to give identification, and taking people away," unquote. Goebel opposed the measure allowing closer cooperation between city police and ICE, but later changed his position and cast the deciding vote for passage. Recall organizers have until October 3rd to submit almost 2,500 valid signatures from District 4 to make the Ortiz recall eligible for the ballot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The Grossmont-Cuyamaca Community College District, which includes Grossmont and Cuyamaca Colleges, is inviting community members to apply to serve in the position of board member for Area 1, which comprises the cities and communities of Santee, Winter Gardens, and Lakeside. Once an individual is appointed to fill the position, they would serve until the next regularly scheduled board election in November 2026 and continue until their successor qualifies for office. This position became vacant in July when former trustee Desiree Clar, a Grossmont College alumna and San Diego County native, stepped down after moving out of the area. Clar, a former educator and human resources specialist with experience in private industry and nonprofit organizations in San Diego County, had served as a trustee since 2022. Responsibilities of the position include a commitment to the mission and functions of the community colleges and the ability to participate fully in the work of the board. Ideal candidates should be knowledgeable about the communities served by the district, engage in participatory governance, balance the needs of diverse groups, contribute to and build consensus, and support the board as a whole. Interested applicants should visit the Grossmont-Cuyamaca Community College District's website at gcccd.edu for information, qualifications, applications, and submission instructions. Completed applications should be submitted to the District Governing Board Office no later than Thursday, September 4th at 5 p.m. For questions, you can contact the Board Office at 619-644-7570. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The city of Lemon Grove is actively seeking applicants to fill the vacant city council seat left by the death of Steve Fayai, who passed away on July 8th after a heart attack. At its August 5th meeting, the Lemon Grove City Council directed staff to open the application process for the appointment of a city council member to fill out the remainder of Fayai's term. The council opted against calling for a special election, which could have cost the city over $250,000. The appointed council member will serve through December 2026. To qualify, you must be a U.S. citizen at least 18 years of age before the appointment, be a resident and registered to vote in the city of Lemon Grove, and may not have been convicted of certain serious felony crimes such as bribery, embezzlement, extortion, theft of public funds, perjury, or conspiracy to commit any of those crimes. It's a part-time position, compensated at $803 a month plus benefits. The application period is open now and runs through September 4th. Applications are available at the City Clerk's office at Lemon Grove City Hall or online at lemongrove.ca.gov. After the application period closes, city staff will verify each applicant's eligibility. All qualified applicants will have 3 minutes to present their qualifications during interviews on September 16th at 6 p.m. at the Lemon Grove City Council chambers. A question and answer session may follow, after which the City Council may make an appointment during that September 16th meeting, or schedule further consideration at a later date. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A coalition of advocacy groups has pushed major reforms of a state public assistance program through the California General Assembly, and now says even more changes could improve its impact. The program, known as CalWORKS, provides financial assistance for families with children and helps parents find employment and job training. Rebecca Gonzalez with the Western Center on Law and Policy says CalWORKS was created when negative stereotypes of people on public assistance were common. She says some new provisions give families more freedom to tailor the program's work-related services to their needs.
We really wanted to reimagine the program to be more supportive of families, to give families more choice in the activities they're pursuing and how they are developing the tools they need to support their families, whether that be going to school or a training program or going straight into work.
That includes reassessing what have been mandatory activities for people who already have specific skills and not reducing benefits at the beginning of a family's enrollment as they try to meet the program requirements. In addition to the Western Center on Law and Poverty, the coalition working on the reforms includes End Child Poverty in California and SEIU California. More than 500,000 families receive CalWORKS assistance, according to the County Welfare Directors Association of California. Gonzalez says the coalition isn't finished making recommendations to improve the program, including the rules for CalWORKS families dealing with a truant child.
When a CalWORKS family, when the child is not going to school, they would sanction the families and take away part of their grant, which is really difficult for these families because that just destabilizes the families.
She says the coalition also plans to advocate for removing the requirement that a person must work less than 100 hours a month to qualify for CalWORKS, regardless of income. Gonzalez notes 100 hours a month doesn't guarantee enough income to support a family. For Public News Service, I'm Simone Perez. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's Destination East County, with all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region. As summer transitions into fall, September brings seasonal events such as an Autumn Jubilee, Grape Stomp Festa and Appletime Tea in Julian, Oktoberfest in El Cajon, a 911 Memorial Walk in Lakeside, a Roaring Twenties Fashion Show in Lemon Grove, and Poway's annual Rotary Parade. Plus, find end-of-summer music jams at Santee Lakes, theatrical productions, concerts at several locations, Santee's Movie in the Park, comedy at Sequan, a health fair at Parkway Plaza in El Cajon, and more. And here are the details. Santee Lakes Summer Jams concert series continues each Saturday in September from 5 to 7 p.m. September featured performers include Steel Dawn, Tropical Blues Brothers, Appian Way, Heartbreak Hotel, Elvis Tribute, Joker's Hand, and Ed Johnson. For details, you can visit the East County Chamber of Commerce website at eastcountychamber.org. Get ready to roll up your pants and squish grapes beneath your feet at the 28th Annual Julian Grape Stomp Festa. This juicy event will take place on September 6th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Mangini Winery in Julian. You can also taste wines from multiple local wineries, savor foods available for purchase, and enjoy live music, dancing, and vendors. Find full details at visitjulian.com. Santee's Off-Broadway Live Theater will present Because You're Mine, a tribute to Johnny Cash and June Carter. Performances will be held September 12th through 14th, starring Charles Evans Jr. as Johnny Cash and Katie Grady as June Carter. Because You're Mine brings to life the timeless hits that defined a generation. Your ticket includes cheesy chicken enchilada dinners along with wine, beer, or champagne. You can get tickets at offbroadwaylive.com. The Main Avenue Revitalization Association in Lakeside will hold its 6th annual Never Forget Memorial Walk to commemorate the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. The walk will be held September 11th starting at 6:15 p.m. Meet at 6 p.m. at Mary's Donuts on Main Street. A tribute will be held after the walk at 6:30 at the Lakeside Historical Society. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts invites you to savor the fall season with an apple-themed version of their cottage classic tea, including soup, apple-themed finger sandwiches, and savories, a scone with apple butter plus an apple dessert. A children's menu is available, and gluten-free and vegetarian versions can be provided with advance notice. The Apple Time Teas will be held September 11th through 15th, with several seating times each day. Reservations are required and can be made at juliantea.com. Viejas Casino and Resort invites you to saddle up for an epic night of modern country music with Midland on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. The Grammy-nominated trio takes stage with a high-energy show, retro vibe, and hits such as Drinkin' Problem and Burnout. Tickets are available at viejas.com. The 60th Annual Poway Rotary Parade will step out on September 13th, starting at 9 a.m. along Poway Road. This year's theme is Celebrating Heritage and Unity. The parade includes marching bands, festooned vehicles, equestrian entries, pets on parade, and more. Find details at powayrotaryparade.org. The Manzanita Concert Series will present Hot Club de Clamont, performing jazz and swing music on September 14th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The concert will be held at Mission Trails Church. Find tickets and the full season lineup at manzanitaconcerts.com. The City of Santee invites you to view Wizard of Oz as a summer's end movie in the park September 20th at 4 p.m. The perennial popular movie classic will be shown at Town Center Community Park East. For more information on this and other Santee events, you can visit cityofsantee.ca.gov. Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Wynola, just outside of Julian, will host an autumn jubilee each weekend from September 20th through October 26th. There is an admission fee for this event, which includes a hayride, cider pressing, hoedown and jug band shows, reptile interactions, candle dipping, and a craft to make and take home. Additional adventurous activities available for a fee include tomahawk throwing, archery, a slingshot gallery with paintballs, plus you pick veggies, herbs, and berries. For more information on this autumn jubilee, you can visit fortcross.com. You're invited to step into the splendor of the jazz age at a Roaring Twenties fashion show event benefiting Lemon Grove Forward Club and the Southern District Women's Club. The event on Saturday, September 27th, starting at 10:30 a.m., will feature a glamorous day of style and community purpose featuring a luncheon and silent auction. Dress to dazzle in your best 1920s-inspired attire. The location is the Sunshine House on Main Street in Lemon Grove. Reservations are required. You can reserve tickets by email Miss Martha at san.rr.com or just call 619-750-7285. The Lemon Grove Forward Club supports improving access to youth, senior, and educational activities while building relationships with other nonprofits and community organizations in Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove Forward Club is a member of the Southern District Women's Club. Well-known comedian Josh Blue will perform at Saquon's Live and Up Close and Personal Theater September 27th. After winning NBC's Last Comic Standing competition in 2006, Josh Blue became a headliner at venues worldwide, including late-night shows, Comedy Central, comedy festivals, and more. As a comedian with cerebral palsy, his story has also been featured on virtually every major TV network as well as major national newspapers. You can learn more and get tickets at saquon.com/events. You can get free healthcare screenings and learn about preventive healthcare and more at the Grossmont Healthcare District's Fall Health Fair at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon. That's on September 27th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, visit business.eastcountychamber.org. The Moxie Theater will present Blues for an Alabama Sky when it opens September 28th and runs on select dates through October 26th. The play follows a rich cast of characters as they pursue their dreams of making names for themselves in the jazz-steeped streets of Harlem, but those visions fade with the arrival of fall, the Great Depression, and a handsome stranger. For tickets and details, visit moxietheater.com. Moxie is in San Diego, but just a couple of blocks outside of La Mesa. El Cajon Oktoberfest will take place the last weekend in September and the first weekend in October. The German-American societies invite you to don your Lederhosen and enjoy two full weekends of authentic German celebrations at the El Cajon Oktoberfest. Guests can feast with gusto on foods such as bratwurst, sauerkraut, and ox on a spit. Quench your thirst with German beers. Kick up your heels with traditional folk dancing and games such as steinholding competitions. There are also interactive musical entertainment options, a band flown in directly from Germany, a kids zone, and on opening day, a parade, tapping of the keg, and crowning of the Oktoberfest queen. Find details at events.germanclubsandiego.org. And for all of the events we've covered today, you can find details on our calendar and in the festivals and events section at eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week for more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Public school advocates say the charter school system is broken in California, citing low academic standards, excessive expenses, and poor management. A bill in the California legislature is aimed at reforming the system. In California and many other states, laws give parents the option of sending their kids to a private charter school rather than public schools and using state funds to pay the tuition. Carol Burris, executive director of the Network for Public Education, says charter school growth is out of control and it's hurting public education.
The growth in charter schools of late have been in what we call mega charters, very, very large charter schools, many of them online charter schools. They have been really prone to some pretty outlandish scandals.
In 2024, the state had 1,300 active charter schools and 7 all-charter districts, with almost 650,000 students enrolled. Assembly Bill 84 focuses on enhancing accountability and financial oversight for schools, particularly in charter schools, and aims to address potential fraud and abuse within the system. Opponents say the bill could increase restrictions on charter schools, potentially defunding them and limiting parental choice. Burris says many of the state's charter schools are online and don't have to maintain the same level of academic rigor as other schools in order to remain open.
They have the incentive to bring lots of kids in to keep the costs low, and they don't have to worry particularly about academic success because they probably will not be shut down.
She says the issues that have made news headlines involving some California charter schools include cheating on reporting attendance figures, what she terms outrageous expenses, and academic fraud. The reform bill has passed in the state assembly and is pending in the state senate. Burris says it faces stiff opposition.
Whenever you try to do any reform with charter schools, and this has happened in the past in California and in other states, there's a very powerful charter lobby, especially in California, and they tend to fight reforms tooth and nail.
For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, August 25th, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. The Trump administration has been planning to send the National Guard to Chicago as part of an expanding anti-crime agenda in major U.S. cities, two officials told CNN. Democratic lawmakers and local leaders are pushing back, saying the president's claims are at odds with the facts on the ground. CNN reports Trump's law enforcement efforts have gone hand in hand with his goal of ramping up deportations. The deployment of federal agencies in D.C. this month led to a huge spike in immigration arrests. And Trump has threatened funding for bridge construction in Baltimore due to an escalating clash with Maryland's governor over crime. Meantime, the U.S. District Court of Maryland says the Department of Education cannot withhold funding from schools that fail to remove initiatives and programming related to diversity, equity, and inclusion.
One Maryland teachers union hails the August 14th decision as a win for students and educators. In February, the Department of Education sent a letter threatening to withhold funding from schools that continue DEI programs. The Maryland chapter of the American Federation of Teachers challenged the letter, citing violations of the First Amendment. Kenya Campbell with AFT Maryland says the Trump administration went too far.
The way that the letter was written, it was very arbitrary in that the directive from Trump's Department of Education was an unlawful overreach that basically threatened the education of all Maryland students.
The Trump administration takes a hard stance against DEI initiatives, claiming they indoctrinate students with liberal ideologies. The administration also believes considerations of race or ethnicity in any type of program or admissions decisions are discriminatory under the Civil Rights Act. I'm Zimon Perez.
The U.S. is falling behind in the global race to sell electric vehicles, and losing the race could harm states with EV manufacturing plants like Arizona.
The nation still has the chance to catch up with China, its biggest competitor, according to Catherine Yusko with the American Security Project. She's written about the EV race, highlighting some of the ways the U.S. can close the gap with China, as well as some of the biggest barriers. She says funding from the climate legislation passed under President Joe Biden provides clean manufacturing credits that enable the U.S. to build out a more resilient domestic battery supply.
Unfortunately, with these credits being phased out by 2033, this is a new development as of the Big Beautiful Bill. This is likely to slip, and there have been billions of dollars in cancellation in battery factories and battery manufacturing since the first months of the Trump administration.
Yusko notes tariffs are another challenge, as China has a chokehold on the minerals needed to produce EV batteries. If the EV market declines in the U.S., it could mean serious impacts for Arizona. The state is home to the eighth largest EV factory in the country, Lucid Motors, which began operating in 2021. I'm Eric Tegadoff reporting.
Next to Utah, where a much-needed highway project for the city of St. George was scuttled when President Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
The $87 million project would have built crosswalk underpasses along Interstate 15, which currently divides the city. St. George Councilwoman Danielle Larkin was part of the coalition that obtained the grant. She says losing the funding came as a shock.
We had a big celebration when we were awarded the funding initially because it really is such an important connector and safe route to school in our community.
The budget bill rescinded more than $2 billion approved for infrastructure projects under the Biden-era Inflation Reduction Act. GOP Congresswoman Celeste Molloy, whose district included St. George, voted yes on the budget bill. She did not respond to a request for comment. Mark Richardson reporting.
And the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada holds annual general consumer sessions today in Las Vegas. It is a chance for members of the public to speak their minds to the commission.
A coalition of local nonprofits will hold a public rally before the evening session to ask the commission to increase oversight of NV Energy, the state's monopoly utility provider. Camelot Todd with the Nevada Conservation League notes the commission filed a petition in May to open an investigation into NV Energy for overcharging ratepayers.
They overcharged more than 80,000 customers by $17 million for more than two decades, and then tried to avoid full payment of those overcharges by applying the wrong refund rule. And that only came to light because Nevadans flagged that for the PUC.
NV Energy has acknowledged the billing errors and has begun issuing refunds. I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Mike Clifford, and thank you for starting your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You've been listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ. You can get involved as a volunteer or send news tips by contacting editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.